On this episode of the Star Trek Universe podcast, we are talking all about the season 2 finale of Lower Decks, episode 210, First Contact, right after these words from our mystery sponsor.
Welcome to the Star Trek Universe Podcast, the podcast where you get to listen in on the continuing Star Trek conversation that two lifelong friends have been having since they were 6 years old. My name is Matthew Carroll.
And I am David C. Robertson.
Well, fancy meeting you here, good sir, for a finale wrap-up of Lower Decks.
Yeah, man.
Big finale, man. I love this episode.
I did too.
Last season was similar in the way they did like the huge actual mission, if that makes sense. I mean, they always have a mission, but it's often doesn't matter. That's part of the joke of the show, is that not only is it Lower Decks, it's also like the lower end of the fleet where they're having to deal with sort of secondary missions. But you know, both of these seasons have ended on this cool wrap-up episode where you actually got this, like, you know, life is on the line and, like, actually inspiring. When the crew, like, went to, they were like, you know, we've got 11 hours. We've got to work on this. I need basically the call out to the ship was, I need everyone on the ship to act like a lower decker. Like, no matter what your duties normally are, I need you on the hull taking off pieces of the hull. We all have to do physical labor today, you know? And it just made me smile so big, man. I loved it. It really, like, inspired me.
And it also just felt like it was such a big, like, triumphant coming together, seeing the crew of the Cerritos at their best.
Absolutely.
So often they're the butt of the joke. Even among Starfleet, the California class is the butt of the joke. And that's one of the things I really loved about this finale, because, you know, the last finale, their asses were getting handed to them, and then here comes the Titan. And they even did the mirror of it, of the shot where Boimler points at the screen. It's almost exact, and he says, "It's the Titan!" But we have somebody from the, what is it? I want to say Agamemnon, but it's not that.
Archimedes.
The Archimedes. Someone from the Archimedes pointing and saying, "It's the Cerritos!" It's the exact shot. Oh,
that's awesome. Good call.
And, like, they wind up being the crew who makes first contact, because, I mean, they're the heroes of this episode.
You mentioning that makes me realize, like, the very first episode of this show is them making second contact. And that's a joke because, like, they're not allowed to do first contact.
Right. And, like, that's what they do. Second contact.
Yeah. And this episode is very much about, like, Boimler stepping up and doing the action thing. Mariner actually going to her mother to resolve an issue, to make an ally, as it were, and stop pushing people away. She also makes another friend in this episode. Like, it's every character's kind of, like, taking a step in the direction. Even Tendi gets promoted, or, like, gets put onto a different track to be a science officer, a bridge crew science officer. And they all kind of, like, achieve something big in this episode, either personally or professionally. And I really love it.
Yeah, they did a really fantastic job of balancing the comedy with the drama here. It felt like, in many parts, it felt like a very dramatic Star Trek series.
Absolutely. This one's not laugh a minute at all, and I do not mind that. Like, I love caring about these characters. I mean, you know, this show to me feels a lot more sometimes like, I said this last week, I think it was, when we had the episode where you had three or four different ships and all the different lower decks from different species. Yeah. It felt more like a book to me. Because the books often felt like that. This did too. This, like, we've got 11 hours and we have to do this task and we have to solve problems. And, you know, that happens in the movies and in the shows, but a lot of times they have to go from sort of like set piece to set piece in the movies and the shows. I love this sort of just like, we got to solve a problem after solve the next problem. Like, keep moving, keep trying to do the thing that Starfleet does and save lives, you know? Love it.
I'll tell you this. I also loved the fact, going along again with the juxtaposition for, with this and the last finale, You know, last finale, like I said, we got, you know, they were like, it's the Titan, and Riker and Troy show up, you know, two big names. This time, the Cerritos is saving Sonia Gomez from, she's the captain of the Archimedes. Do you remember her from TNG?
No, not at all.
She was in two episodes. I believe it was Q-Who and Samaritan Snare. But she, and when, you remember when that ensign, like, spills the drink or whatever on the bridge? And she was like, don't worry about it. I've done much worse to much more intimidating captains or whatever.
I do remember that. Yeah.
She spilled hot chocolate on Picard.
Aww.
Like, they actually got the, they got the actress back. I loved it.
That's amazing. I loved it. That's amazing. Cool, cool world building. I love and that.
She's the original Lower Decker, too. That's the right. Fantastic.
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. 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 Wait, was that episode called Lower Decks? Was that the Lower Decks episode? No. No. No, you said it was Samaritans, whatever, or Q.
No, but she was definitely, when we met her, she was totally a Lower Decker.
A Lower Decker. Right, right, right. No, no, I just remember there was an episode called Lower Decks, right? And it was about some younger crewmen or whatever.
Yes, much later in the run, yeah.
Right, which is super fun. That it's so cool that they, like, this is basically a sequel to that show, that episode. They made a whole show. It's just such a cool concept. And they've like pulled it together in a really cool way. I like it. It makes me laugh all season. And then out of nowhere, I actually get feels. And I was kind of hoping that, we'd get that, Vulcan officer transferring onto the Cerritos this episode.
Me too. But I suspect that that'll come later or something will happen with her later on, because clearly the Veruvian storyline, the Veruvian bomb storyline with the Packlids is not over.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe with the Packlids, it might be over.
Red alarm. Red alarm.
Gosh. So did they kill off all the Packlids? I mean, like, obviously they have ships, but I mean, the Packlid planet is gone. That's some craziness, man.
Yeah, man. I loved it. I love the way they set up stuff like Rutherford's implant and like the quick memory of them being like, you know, he can't know us, not necessary or whatever it was.
Yeah, 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 totally. Like, what
the hell is that?
Yeah, it's really, really great. What if someone asks why he has it? He'll think it was an elective. We installed that. He'll think it was elective. So like that means his. I'm assuming they're talking about his implant. So what is the purpose of the implant? Like, that's so much fun, man. Like, what's the purpose of the implant?
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
2x2 hands of blue, man. 2x2 hands of blue.
They'll bring in Firefly. I'm just gonna say Section 31. You know,
something. But like, yeah, it totally gave me that Firefly vibes with the two guys, two shadowy figures reaching over his body or whatever. Yeah, yeah,
super creepy. I was touched that he backs up all of his memories with Tendi. You know, I gotta wonder though. I mean, dude, you don't have an external? Like, right. I have an external.
I was thinking the same thing. Well, you remember this was the same problem we had with the episode about, I think it was Arium.
Yeah.
She was doing the same thing. She was backing herself, like, she had to delete memories every day. And I was like, can't you, like, I don't know. Isn't there a hard drive option? Isn't there an external? Clearly there's something in your brain holding all this information. Wouldn't it be easy to have like one outside your brain that you could store some of these things in?
Right. I mean, I've got two massive external hard drives sitting on either side of my monitor. I mean, it's just like a few weeks ago and I was like, what, Jeffrey Combs doesn't have Wi-Fi?
Right.
Like, he can't. Why does he got to connect to a computer to control it?
Yeah.
But whatever. Whatever.
A little silly. Get some Bluetooth, Jeffrey.
What's up, man?
What?
I said, what's up, man?
Oh, talking to Jeffrey?
Jeffrey Combs, yes.
Sorry. It seemed like you were just changing gears and asking me what was up. I was like,
no,
I'm talking about Star Trek on the podcast.
I'll tell you this. I've never seen the Reanimator films with Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah.
But I like Jeffrey Combs so much that I very nearly bought one of those Toonie Terrors, that action figures that NECA puts out. Mm-hmm. I very nearly bought one of the Reanimator just because it's Jeffrey Combs.
Interesting. We should watch the Reanimator.
See what they're like. We should.
I'm down. I am down, my friend.
They look terrible.
So, just lots of great stuff in this episode. I mean, the Captain Picard Day references with Captain Freeman Day.
Yes.
Super fun. Just the whole thing about it being for children and Boimler being incredibly excited about it. Isn't that a craft day for children? And then the dolphins later have the callback of, that's for calves.
Yeah. I believe they were beluga whales, actually.
Interesting. I thought they were dolphins. Yeah. He says dolphin pee at one point.
He does.
but I still don't doubt that you might be right.
In doing the research for this episode, they repeatedly said beluga whale. I don't know whales from dolphins most of the time, you know? There's a future Captain D over there.
What? Weirdo with a riding crop. That's a reference to an episode, right? There was a captain with a riding crop, right?
That is a reference to Captain Stiles from Star Trek III.
Okay.
The original captain of the Excelsior.
Yeah, I remembered the image of a guy on the bridge with a riding crop, and I knew they were referencing it, but I couldn't place it.
AKA Doogie Howser's dad.
Oh yeah, I remember you mentioning that when we were talking about that episode, that movie. What really small reference that I loved was Billups when he realized there was damage to the outside of the hull. That he couldn't get that one off, he goes up and goes, "Dragon's blood," as a curse word, because he's from that cosplay culture.
Yep, absolutely.
So good.
You know, my favorite callback in this episode had to be when they revived Boimler from drowning.
And I knew
And he says, "I saw a koala." And Tindy's like, don't, it was best not to pass that around.
Yep. Just
keep that to yourself.
What does it know? What does it know?
Why is he smiling? What does he know? And I love how, more than any other Star Trek series, Lower Decks seems to be content to be the one to, focus on and build the afterlife of Star Trek. It's there's a giant koala who's smiling, and also you have to fight a visage of your father after you climb the Black Mountain.
Oh, man.
Go through several trials.
It makes me wonder if we're going to, encounter something that's been, I don't know, inhabiting the afterlife of all the Lower Deck, of all the people on the Cerritos or something like that. You know what I mean? I could totally, the way this show has worked so far and planted little seeds, I could totally see them finding out that some sort of psychic leech that's happening in their, in their dream states or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Oh man. Love it. I loved, he says, the cat doctor, Bicklesworth. Donna. Ah, yes, Dahana.
Dr. Bicklesworth.
Yes, grown up Dr. Bicklesworth. He followed in Dr. Evil's footsteps and went to Evil Medical School.
And when Dr. Bigglesworth gets upset, people die!
Dr. Tahana is tells her that she's going to be, it tells Tindy that she's going to be a bridge officer or whatever. And she's like Jadzia Dax. And he's like, I don't know who the fuck that is. And he's like Spock, which I thought was funny because it's not that she's calling out the weird thing that they do where they reference Trek characters. It's like she's calling out the fact that nobody knows who DS9 characters are.
Yep. Which is sad because it is absolutely the best series.
I agree, but it also makes total sense in the world that, like, it's the show that's not about the flagship. It's not the legendary ship that, like, it was played a pivotal role in the Dominion War, but, like, so did a lot of other places. Like, that's what I love about DS9, that it's like, it's the central cog to the whole Dominion plotline, but it is not, it's not the flagship, you know? They're living their lives as Starfleet officers, and I just love that show.
Yeah.
Time to do a rewatch of that.
All of those, yes. All the yes.
All the yes.
one of my favorite lines from the episode, of course, comes from Shax. You're lucky I'm so spiritually centered or I'd snap.
Nobody blows anything up on this ship unless it's me. I really liked I'll tell Sick Bay to brace for hangovers.
That was fun.
I don't know. Just good, man. Since the Hall's not supposed to give you hangovers, I guess they got some of the good stuff this planet.
Can I just say how weird and creepy and refreshing it was that the beluga whales were, like, so gross? Like, they were like, take off your shirt, Ransom, come on in. And then later they're like, nothing like saving your friend and going skinny dipping. I can't say dipping.
See, that's what made me think it was dolphins, too, because everybody knows the, like, sort of lascivious reputation of dolphins.
I feel like that's the perfect name for an indie band. The lascivious nature of dolphins.
at least an album. That's definitely a good album cut.
It is.
Maybe that'll be the Garage's next album. The lascivious nature of dolphins.
But I like that both of them asked him to come take off his shirt and come in.
Yeah, like, it's really the second funny.
Was like, you should pay attention. I already asked him. Like, you guys are creeps.
Also, I think they're yelling when Boimler's just almost drown. They keep yelling, put water on him, put water on him. Which is like, that's one of those jokes that's like a little too far. These are like Starfleet officers, apparently, that are smart enough to like deal with these spacefaring issues, and they don't understand that Boimler is not a dolphin.
I enjoyed he's not breathing, his blowhole's broken.
I love that the people were all sitting around talking, and Billups was like, or telling a story, and Shaq's like, but she's a waitress, she says hi to everyone.
That's good.
And then she walks up, what are you guys doing, just bridge crew stuff? It's like just such a sad conversation.
Yeah.
Billups is becoming one of my favorites, and like I felt like he was pretty nondescript prior to the season, and they've really like given him a lot of life this season.
I agree, which is, I mean, if you weren't going to use Paul Scheer, why the hell did you put him on the show? I mean, you got to use Paul Scheer.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And I just don't think he had much to do last season. And this season, they've given him, like, this weird culture that he's from. He's, like, a super sad guy, but he's also, like, weirdly, I don't know. He's still, like, a heroic bridge officer, though. Like,
yeah.
I mean, when he say, you know, forget who he catches at one point. Catch Tindy at one point? Well, Tindy's floating away. I think he catches Tindy.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And then later on, this new, whatever, the bluish green girl catches Mariner. Wait, what vibe do you get there? What vibe do you get from this Mariner and bluish green girl relationship?
Oh, Mike McMahon has actively said they're going to date.
Okay.
Next season.
I got that vibe, and honestly, it fit. Like, it fit well. Like, it didn't feel forced or anything. Except, the only thing that, like, at the very end, I was like, wait. When they got there, and do we know her name?
Jennifer something alien.
Okay.
Her first name is Jennifer.
Okay, weird. Jennifer something alien. Interesting. No, I thought
it's Jennifer Shireyan.
Jennifer. It's funny that they went with Jennifer for her first name.
I mean, it's funny.
Yeah, it is. It's very funny. I I really, I totally saw that vibe between them. But then, like, Boimler comes in later, and she's like, I like him. He's like, yeah, he's great. And I kind of got this vibe of like, oh, wait, now who is she going to like? Is there going to be a little triangle here, possibly? Because she just seems kind of flirtatious. I don't know.
I don't know, but, you know, McMahon was saying that, you know, like, throughout the season, she's shown contempt for Jennifer. But it's one of those things where it's like, it suits Mariner that she'll wind up dating her because she, as she has realized in this season, she pushes everything she likes away, everyone she likes away.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, and, you know.
And that also just fits, like, a lot of different, I don't know, relationships on shows, like the whole, like, it's kind of that, little kids pulling the hair of people they like kind of thing that, like, still seems to happen with people, and at least on TV. I don't know that I've ever really seen that in real life. People getting in, like, spats because they like each other. Now, after they're in relationships, sure.
Yeah. Once the dark side starts to show.
Yeah, yeah. That I have plenty of experience with. But, you know, I don't know that I've ever seen this whole, like, pigtail pulling kind of relationships in real life.
I would say that there were a couple of girls in college that I had a combative relationship with, an acquaintance. Combative acquaintance.
You're like, I didn't punch them. We shot barbs at each other. verbal barbs. Let me be clear.
There seemed to be contempt, and then there was some sort of underlying attraction we followed through on, and then, you know, we were both like, this is a bad idea. You know, there's a couple of those.
Like, oh, right, I dislike you.
Yeah, like, those feelings of hatred were real.
Maybe, yeah, you know what? You say all that, and now I'm remembering some of these girls, and I'm like, yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
No, you didn't know any of these girls.
I've seen you spar verbally with girls that you later were interested in.
That's true.
So I know some of those girls, maybe not the ones you're talking about.
Boredom and desperation will get to any man, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe, I guess I have seen that a little bit with you. Maybe you're a Mariner type. But sorry, that's apparently, according to the captain, that's not the same thing as a Kirk style free spirit. I'm sorry to say.
I've never claimed that.
I'm a Kirk-style free spirit. You know that. That's why you're always protecting me from court-martial.
That was a fantastic line.
It was.
By the way, did I mention, I feel like I meant to mention this, and I didn't. I feel like I accidentally failed to. A few episodes ago, when they were doing the evaluations, did I mention that in the program where Boimler is, again, the focus is clearly on Boimler's censored asshole.
Right.
And, like, all the naked people in the ten forward. What I loved, one of the things I loved that I noticed was just, like, I don't know if he's supposed to be asexual or repressed or whatever, but Billups just sitting over way in the back, completely naked, just on his laptop.
I didn't see that. That's amazing. Yeah. Oh, speaking of Billups, this episode when he had the, like, profanity-laden tirade about her leaving.
Yeah.
That's fucking bullshit. We're as good as any other damn ship. Like, he just bleep, bleep, bleep. Yeah. I love a good, like, overly bleeped group of sentences. It could be really fun.
Yep.
Oh, man. Oh, let's see. I like their tour of the ship. Their favorite spots.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Maintenance hatch 88, always warm to the touch.
Yeah.
Burns your hand. It was good. It was good. I liked it a lot.
I like that we actually finally saw cetacean ops. Like, that's a thing that they mentioned in, like, TNG, yesterday's Enterprise, man. Like,
cetacean ops? What is that?
That is where the whales are. They've been mentioning it on Lower Decks.
Okay. What is cetacean ops? Is that where there's...
Wherever they were, that where the whales were, I guess.
Is that... that's a thing in TNG? There's a whale room?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't recall that.
I mean, I guess it would be a place where they could study, you know, water shit on planets. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's it's interesting that they've talked about that.
I'm so not a scientific person. It's like, I don't know, water shit.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I'm down. I'm picking up what you're putting down. There's a great moment on the Orville where they're walking through like a lab full of like amazing flora and fauna, and like it's a science lab sort of thing. It's the first episode. They're walking through and they're like, "Ooh, this is amazing." And they look over and like this creature comes out of the water, and it's like this weird like sort of animal, and it kind of like looks at them like, and she's like, "What is that?" And he's like, "That's Dr. Whatever." Like, it's just one of the staff of the lab. Uh-huh. It's a pretty great moment because the officer has no idea.
Right.
This reminded me of that, them being water-based creatures hanging out in this little lab.
I did love that the controls for the water-based creatures just disregarded their flippers.
Right.
And was made for...
And I loved how upset they were about it. And like they've had that, like they have to have that conversation all the time and no one's listening.
Yeah. That was enjoyable.
Yeah, it was great.
This whole episode was pretty great.
Shortly after that, I loved the whole thing about like, you know, "You just don't understand my family," and then Tendi cutting in and be like, "We are your family," and like, yes, we've got this, and just like being, you know, deciding that they've got it, and you need to take care of something personal, and we have this. You don't have to be the hero in this moment. Boimler can handle it. We can handle it. You go do your thing. Like, just really. It was really nice, man. It was a really nice moment.
I agree. I dug it. I really liked the growth. You know, they like to make jokes on the show about like self-contained adventures and
yeah,
and nothing carrying over. But they've done a fantastic job of actually growing these characters the past 2 years.
There's more growth in these characters in two seasons than anything except for Deep Space Nine. Like any other Star Trek series except for Deep Space Nine. Enterprise and... Enterprise doesn't have a ton of growth either. But I would say... I don't know. I feel like there's been a lot of growth on this show.
Now, look, man. Like I said, I've been doing a Voyager rewatch. I'm seeing some good growth, actually. Maybe not in two seasons' time.
Right, yeah. That's what I'm trying to compare.
Yeah, like, in looking at it, like, and then, like, remembering older later seasons, I'm like, well, Tom Paris did grow a whole lot. And, well, Neelix isn't nearly the jealous piece of shit that he was, because he was a totally controlling dick with Kes.
Right.
I'm like, dude, she is three. You are dating a minor? But also, you're a dick. Stop being so jealous, you weirdo.
Yeah.
I see the way Paris looks at you. Why is she to blame for that?
Yeah.
Neelix, piece of shit. Anyway.
Jealouser. Isn't that a song? There's a song. 90s song, Jealousy?
Something. Yes, anyway. There is a 90s song called Jealousy. There's something, I think there's more than one.
I'm sure.
No, neither of them sounded like whatever the hell you were just doing. Hey, that sounded like some Scott Stapp shit.
Yeah, man. Yeah, something like that. One of them, Pearl Jam. It was either, I don't know. I'm looking it up. See, somebody out there is like, I'm not a big, I don't know, whatever.
I thought it was like Natalie Merchant or somebody.
Olivia Rodrigo?
Yeah, Natalie Merchant did one called Jealousy.
Okay. It's probably the one I'm thinking of.
That's the one that's like, ooh, Jealousy.
Yeah, that's the one I was singing.
Okay. Well, that's Natalie Merchant. That's not Scott Stapp or Pearl Jam or... I mean, you were actively doing like one of those voices, one of those butt rock voices.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's
she is
Natalie
Merchant.
Natalie Merchant is totally butt rock.
No,
in the same way.
No, sir.
All right. Let's see. I really loved the animation in this episode of the ships. Which I always glorious. Enjoy on the show, but like they really, sorry, I wanted to listen to the beginning of that Natalie Merchant song.
I was tempted.
They really, did a good job with, the action of this episode and like animating the action and animating the ships. And it like really felt like on a scale of something like, reminded me a lot of Star Trek Generations when like you've got the ship falling toward the planet, and I just really, really thought it was rad, man. And just they remove the view screen, and so Ransom has to like navigate by actual sight through this like minefield. Man, it's good.
Yeah, and with a much more functional looking joystick than Riker had in Insurrection. Like, that shit just popped up from like the arm of his chair. I'm like, oh wow, he didn't have to like go to like ops or whatever and like make a thing come out of the, I mean, ah, okay, cool. That looks dope.
Yeah.
Which I didn't have a problem with the joystick anyway. I know that a lot of Trekkies hated that.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with the joystick. But I liked the hole in the view screen. That just made it, it felt dangerous, you know? Very dangerous. It's almost stupidly so. But that's what was so beautiful about this episode. They were like, there's an entire culture we have to save on top of another ship, another Starfleet vessel we've got to save. And we're willing to completely, you know, risk our own ship for the sake of that. Every one of us is willing to risk our lives to make this happen.
And I actually thought the Cerritos looked better naked.
I liked the Cerritos. Like, I want a toy of the Cerritos without all the panels. The one, like, weird thing. Why didn't they just do that to the captain's yacht? It would have been a lot faster to remove that shielding from the captain's yacht. And it would have been easier to navigate through the little the path there.
It may not have had the...
Secondary hole or whatever.
Yeah, that inner hole may not have been as strong to withstand it.
Very possible, but I gotta imagine it had all the same components to, it's still a spacefaring warp capable vessel. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, well, I don't know. That seems like a plot hole to me.
You can easily headcanon it away.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely headcanonable, but I did think it seems.
I just adequately headcanoned it away, and I'm the guy that said ocean shit or whatever, water shit, whatever it was.
You did indeed.
So, I mean.
So, I thought, just talking about emotional stakes and like how this episode felt emotional at times, I thought when she gets on the captain's yacht and is getting ready to go, like there was a moment where I really legitimately thought she might die. The captain might die.
Really?
Yeah, because they're talking about her leaving the ship already. Mm-hmm. There's already this like goodbye talk. And like, you know, it would be interesting for the Mariner and her relationship. And then she's like, you know, I know I've got to do this. And she's going to go do this stupid plan. And I was like, are they going to kill off the captain? Is she going to be like, you know, is she going to be the Shax of season two?
Yeah, which would be great for progressing the afterlife building of Star Trek.
It would. But unfortunately for the progression of the afterlife, no lives were lost in this episode.
Yeah.
As we find out.
But yeah, I'm interested to see how they'll, get her out of prison.
Yeah, right. Talk about stakes and like what's happening. Like this show just gave us an actual cliffhanger for a season.
And I was there for it.
Right. And it's like a cliffhanger that is built on an entire plot line we've been following all season. We've been talking about what's going on with the Packlids and now, ending in this really fun place. Really cool.
This is my grizzly narrative nussle, man. I dig that shit. That string of words just came to me. I don't know what the hell it means.
That was nice.
But it sounds gross.
That was a really nice, gross and well put together string of words. Oh, man. Let's see. I liked everyone freaking out about her leaving them behind, and Ransom says, "Why the hell wouldn't you take your number one? I agree with you on all things."
That is not the job of a number one, sir.
No, it is not. That's what's so funny about it. It's so funny, too, is like, as Star Trek fans, and really as fans of any of these types of media, who you always want a second in command who's going to challenge you. Like that's a common lesson you learn in these shows.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's funny that that is a joke on this show because we all know that because it's a common plot line. He can make that joke and we're like, he's a bad number one.
He really is.
He is. It's great. Oh, it's so good. Was the rubber ducky room a reference to anything?
It was, yeah.
What is the rubber ducky room a reference to?
If you look at the old Star Trek The Next Generation technical manual, you will see that Mike Okuda, who recently just became the technical director for Lower Decks and helped them change some design elements of the Cerritos, He there's a room where there's a rubber ducky. He's literally got like a rubber ducky room on the Enterprise D schematics.
Like a large rubber ducky, like a room sized rubber ducky?
No, like a room that on the diagram, it just looks like there's a rubber ducky there. It just looks like there's a duck, like a big duck.
Weird. What a weird, weird thing to reference.
He just thought it was funny.
So weird. Like, how deep? And it's great that you knew that. I had no idea. Oh, man, it's cool.
Oh, yeah. Like, I know weird shit about Star Trek, though. Oh, like, I actually laughed really hard at that joke, and Bethany just looked at me like I was weird.
I laughed hard at it too, but I just assumed it was a reference, but even without it being a reference, it's funny.
Yeah, like I'm just waiting on them to like bring up the fact that Starfleet Command thinks it's appropriate to put Jim Croce lyrics on all of the doors. Because that's totally a thing that happened. It's like the little panels on the doors that had like supposedly had like tentacle writings and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like they would just put like lyrics and weird shit on there. And I know some of them were from Jim Croce.
That's fun. That's really fun.
About, you know, not tugging on Superman's cape or not spitting into the wind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I had two more lines that I liked.
Sure.
I had just warp me already, which is a great, like, you know, whatever, punch it or engage or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just instead of her having anything like that, she just says, just warp me already.
Yep. That was enjoyable.
It's nice. And I also liked, I'll have a break in 7 hours either way. And then her like number two says, but in 7 hours you'll be, oh, I see what you did there.
I liked at the beginning when she was like going off into like all this horrible stuff that she's like, okay, well, that's enough existential dread.
Yep. It's enough, like, existential dread. Let's get to work.
I was bummed out because after watching this episode, I went on Twitter and I was like, look, you know, I was like, come on, fellow Trekkies, Trek Twitter, whatever. It's like, if we can get Strange New Worlds happening by fan demand, I think we can get an Archimedes show with Gomez. And, like, no one liked it. No one retweeted it. No one commented. It was a bummer.
Yeah, that sucks. Because I do. I liked your character a lot.
Yeah, I absolutely do. I would love to see more of her.
So, any other things about this episode you liked or wanted to mention? Or is God. That it? Are we done?
I think I'm done. Like, oh, no, you know what? I loved the Archimedes. Like, I'll say that. Like, it was...
Yeah.
I told Bethany, I was like, I dig that ship. That's like, it's like an Excelsior-class ship with a Sovereign class primary hull. It looks badass.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'd love to see it in a series of its own.
Yeah, dude. It's really cool. All right, my friends. Well, that is all for the Star Trek Universe podcast tonight, I guess. Everything going on okay with you, Dave? You doing all right?
Yeah, I guess I'm okay. I don't know. I'm just kind of here. It's been a busy week. Had a car issue, had to fix an alternator, got some cool stuff at a thrift store. Nice. Star Trek stuff.
Too, yeah. Y'all. Yeah. You sent me pictures of the Star Trek haul you had at the thrift store. Yeah. A bunch of cool figures.
Yeah. I was haggling them. I was like, over the past like 4 years, I've been in here a number of times and you've had this Picard and Data in that window. Mm. Each priced at $15.
Mm-hmm.
These are the Nemesis figures that Art Asylum did. And I was like, you know, I know you've had them in there because that's why the packaging is all faded. I'll take both of them. I'll take the pair, $20 even. You were just complaining about how you need to get some of this Star Trek stuff out of here. I bought a bunch of other stuff. And the guy was like, yeah, all right, get them out of my face. Like, yeah.
That's awesome. Awesome,
I've been eyeing those figures for years, waiting for the time, waiting for my moment to pounce.
Just knowing that I would be the only one to eye them.
Well, I started to get that feeling, you see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm pretty good too. I'm a little overstressed right now. We've had a really wild couple of weeks with the music side. And the podcast side has been pretty busy, so it's just like everything's kind of compounded, and I've just been really, really busy. And visiting Alyssa in Dallas, and she visited here, and back and forth. But as much as I love visiting her in Dallas, and it's been wonderful, and I wouldn't trade it, I can't go in November, and she's coming here in December. So this week is my first week back, and I don't leave again. Like, I'm staying in Birmingham for the next 2 months, which hasn't happened for a while. So
yeah,
just like not having to pack up all my gear, not having to pack up and go somewhere. Like, I'm actually home. I can stick to, like, it's easier to eat better. It's easier to exercise. It's easier to just stay on like my goals and.
I thought you were going to say easier to flagrantly masturbate.
Why? Why did you think that?
I don't know.
All right. Well, on that note, I mean, it is, but I didn't want to bring it. I wasn't planning to bring it up.
I did live with you for a while. Maybe it's just knowing your patterns.
Oh, gross. Well... Dave's given us plenty of gross things to think about, mostly involving me.
No.
Or
yes.
Something about gristle earlier? I don't know. Gristle and nuzzling? Nuzzling the gristle? I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't remember what the hell I said.
We'll check the tapes.
No. Check the tapes.
No, we won't. All right. Much love to you guys out in the Star Trek world. Prodigy starts like next week, right?
It sure does. I can't wait for it. I'm down.
Yeah, dude, same.
We get to change the name of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
We get to talk about a different thing.
Yeah, dude, I'm pumped. Prodigy, we got Prodigy coming up, and we got Discovery in just a few weeks after that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so much. So much
cool stuff. I don't know. They might actually interlock. I don't know.
Yeah, I was wondering about that because I just assumed because Discovery comes very soon, right? Like it's in November or something, December?
Yeah, I think it's like the end of November.
So either Prodigy is very short, and I don't know how many episodes it is, but I could see it being like a short, you know, 6-episode run or something like that. I could see that, maybe. Or it's going to overlap with Discovery by a good chunk.
It does look like it's very
high production values.
Yes, very high production value.
I agree. That's why I was thinking it makes sense if they wanted to make it shorter.
I don't know. I don't know how many episodes it's going to be.
But then when I think about children's shows, though, and that is actually targeted at children, I think of them as having more episodes, not less, because kids will sit down and watch, you know, the same, that show every week if they like it or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be a 10-episode season.
Okay. So it sounds like it's going to overlap pretty significantly.
Yeah. It looks like it's, it's going to probably be like, you know, the other Hageman Brothers stuff, the Tales of Arcadia stuff on Netflix. So, I mean, they're about 10 episodes a season.
Yeah. All right.
Very similar production values, the same kind of animation. Those are terrific.
Awesome.
Three Below and The Wizards and all that poor shit. I mean, it's a good show.
Yeah. Cool, man.
All of those are good.
I've never seen any of it, so. Cool. All right. Well, guys, I guess that's about it for us. Thank you so much for joining us on the Star Trek Universe podcast. We'll be back with Prodigy next week.
That's right. We will.
Yeah. Jolan True.
Live long. Live prosper. No.
Red alarm. Red alarm.
Help.
Thank you for listening to the Star Trek Universe Podcast, a Stranded Panda production. If you'd like to hear more from David C. Robertson, check out the DC On Screen podcast or maladjusted.tv for his web videos. If you'd like to hear more from Matthew Carroll, check out the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast or listen to his music. Just search for Matthew Carroll anywhere you get music.